on, Richie. We got your back, baby. Let's go, baby. We got your back.
Incognito, left side of the Bills' offensive line.
Bills are just running the ball almost at will today.
I think Richie gets more pancakes than anybody I've seen.
Is it possible that Richie Incognito got a bad rap?
His name has always been as a good football player.
Incognito had pulled from his guard position.
I mean, he had an incident in Miami, but he came back this year, and I feel like he played tremendous.
Welcome to episode one of What's Next with Eric Wood. My first guest will be Richie Incognito, a former teammate of mine and a great friend of mine. I'm excited about this interview. Through it, you will hear us talk about what he's up to now, what transpired over the last year, lessons he learned from the Miami bullying situation, and much more. Let me shed a touch of light on Richie Incognito that maybe you don't know about him. Many people know about how mean he is, you know, once voted the dirtiest player in the NFL. Let me give you two quick stories that'll shed a little bit of light onto the other side of him. A couple years ago, when we were both in Buffalo, we would always do this O-line gift exchange, and it was a white elephant deal. And Richie was the oldest one in the room. I was second oldest, so we were going to be the last two to pick presents. Richie comes up to me the day before and says, "Hey, whatever I put in there, you can grab out. What do you want right now?" I said, "Well, I guess do one of those big iPad Pros, and I'll just take that home, and then I'll get something to throw in the pile for you." So he goes out, buys one, walks in the next morning, hands it to me, says, "Merry Christmas, but I'm also going to put something else in there, so go take whatever you want from it." Just a small act of generosity, and stuff like that was not uncommon with Richie. One year, he's in town for the Kentucky Derby. We're at a Derby party, and he's meeting tons of people throughout the weekend. A buddy of mine, John, at the time was the president of Kids Cancer Alliance in Louisville, Kentucky, talks to him a little bit about his foundation, what he does. Richie says, "Oh, yeah, I'll help you guys out a little bit financially. Hit me up later." Like I said, Richie met so many people that weekend, he may or may not have even remembered the conversation, especially what goes down at a lot of Derby parties. A week later, my buddy John says, "Hey, you mind asking Richie if he was serious, if he has any interest? If not, no worries." Richie, without hesitation, sends him $5,000. Just an awesome gesture, and gives you a little bit of light on Richie Incognito away from the football field. So here we go. Enjoy episode one. Welcome to the show, Richie Incognito. Thanks for coming on What's Next with Eric Wood. It's a pleasure for me to welcome Richie to the show. We were virtually inseparable in Buffalo as players, as buddies, and then my career ends. He's out of football last year, and I literally haven't seen him in a year. So I'm out here in Arizona for the Waste Management Open. I'm out here for a bachelor party, and it's a pleasure to welcome on Richie Incognito.
It's great to see you, buddy, man. It's been a long time. I'm looking forward to this.
Absolutely. So what have you been up to out here in Arizona?
So I've been out here in Arizona just kind of finding myself, man. You know, it's been a difficult transition. What I did was I retired from football, and I spent the next several months enjoying retirement, you know, getting out there, traveling, not having a schedule. And then about the middle of the summer, it smacked me like, you're out of football. Like, what's going on? And what I did was I got myself back into a routine. I got myself back into school at Arizona State. I'm finishing up my degree in communications and sociology. And I started beast mode in training. I went back to training. You know, I really started missing football. I really started missing being around the guys. So I got myself back into training and get myself back in beast mode shape.
Dude, that's what I miss too. I miss being around the guys. I miss competing. Yeah. I miss trying to be the best in the world at something on a daily basis. And it hit me too. And so what you did was the single guy routine. Travel around, you went to Vegas, you know, you had a good time. And that's what the single guy could do. I became a stay-at-home dad.
Right.
So we went different paths, and we both found out how much you miss ball when you're done playing. And that's a lesson for guys that are in the league now. It's like, you never know when it's going to end, and you never know when the rug could be pulled out from under you. So you got to enjoy the moment and stay present. And Richie, you were literally known as being one of the best offensive linemen over a long period of time, and a violent O lineman, mm-hmm. and the baddest dude in the NFL. You talk, I mean, there were tons of surveys done. Who's the dirtiest player in the NFL? You might have been that. Yeah. Who's the best offensive lineman? You might have been that.
Yep.
Who's one dude you don't want to mess with? You were that. What gave you that demeanor and allowed you to do that for such a long time? Because you see guys that come into the league with their hair on fire.
Right.
But you were doing it 13 years in.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think that demeanor, that attitude, that all came from my dad. My dad was a hardworking, blue-collar type guy. He did two tours in Nam as a special forces guy. And he always preached to me, you know, go out there and play like a wild animal. Go play like a wild dog. Leave it out there every single snap. And it started when I was young. You know, I started playing when I was in the 6th and 7th grade. And it was an outlet for my aggression. Mm-hmm. I was always a rambunctious kid, and I always liked physical contact. And when I first put the football pads on, I was like, oh, man, this is awesome.
Right.
And when I first got into the league, I wanted everybody to know I was a badass. I wanted everybody to know that I was the toughest guy. And it went too far. It went into that dirty player category. It went me taking cheap shots on people. And I got that dirty tag that it was kind of hard to shake. But what kept me going was work ethic, demeanor, and just being hungry, you know, hungry and pushing myself every single day to top the last day, you know, get better every day, learn something new, push yourself, and, you know, expand your horizon.
Yeah, I mean, I witnessed it in Buffalo, and you trained harder than probably anybody on our team. You took nutrition seriously. You took sleep seriously, and you took – you had your own physical therapist that you would fly in weekly from Arizona. Yep. And then we all started seeing her. It was valuable for all of us.
Yep.
But it can be a lesson to guys that literally everything matters. And if you want to play at a high level, would you agree that you just have to take everything serious if you want to stay at that level for a long time?
Absolutely. You have to take everything serious. You have to put your 100% into everything every day, and you have to evolve. You have to get better day over day, week over week, year over year. And that was my thing year to year. I would always add something new in, you know, nutrition, sleep, Pilates, yoga, bringing the physical therapist in. And that not only helped you become a better player and a better athlete, but it also gave you a mental edge over everybody. Like, hey, I'm checking all the boxes. I'm getting better than everybody. I am beast mode in training. I'm recovering better. So it just kind of propels you. But, yeah, you know, my advice to young guys is just keep adding, keep growing, because once you think you've made it and you just stop evolving, that's when the game passes you by.
Right. You're right. And that's when people get old.
Absolutely. You know, right. Yeah.
When guys can't bend. And, dude, when I tell people how fast you are,
yeah,
you know, and when we played together, you were 33 in your last year.
Yep.
Like, people wouldn't believe that you were faster than – I mean, you think you were faster than Charles Clay?
I don't know if I was
not
fashion
on a good day.
I don't know if I was faster than Charles Clay.
Were you faster than Nick O'Leary?
I'd probably take O'Leary in a race. O'Leary, but that's nothing to brag about. But yeah, I can move, man. Like that was my thing. You know, my whole game was built on speed, and I have this crazy power. And once you link both of those things up, and then you have a nasty attitude, I mean, that's where you get a Pro Bowl offensive lineman.
Yeah, I could get over how fast you were, because I was always known in Buffalo at Louisville as being this fast O lineman. Yep. And dude, you were way twitchier than me.
Yeah.
And it was like – and I had a lot of lower body injuries. I can now dunk a basketball again.
I saw that. Yeah. That video was awesome.
So I could finally dunk again. It took me losing 40-something pounds. Yeah. But, you know, when you came to Buffalo, you were smoking me, and that blew me away. And you came to Buffalo on the heels of the Miami saga.
Yep.
And that's been so played out. We're not going to get into the ins and outs.
Yep.
Who was right, who was wrong. You know what side of the fence I sit on that, just because I knew you prior, I knew you during, and the time you spent in Buffalo blew me away with your work ethic and how you treated guys. And, you know, an NFL locker room, it's 53 alpha males.
Right.
And there's stuff that goes on that unfortunately got blown so far out of proportion. But I think the value is, and what we can learn is, what types of lessons, or what was the main lesson you learned from that whole Miami deal?
The biggest lesson that I learned from that is, you know, treating other people with respect at all times. And it's hard, like you said, when you're in that locker room and it's 53 alphas, it's like a constant pissing match. You know, I'm stronger, I'm tougher, I'm smarter, I can gamble more, I can do more. And it's like kind of like a one-upper mentality. But the one thing I realized from the Miami situation was just realizing that your day-to-day interactions and everything you say matters.
Right.
And it was difficult because I felt like I was in the right in the entire Miami situation. Then you take a step back and you start evaluating your actions, and it's like, oh, you know, I could have acted differently here. I could have said something differently here. And then what happened in Miami was you had an investigation that came in, and Ted Wells came in with a preconceived notion of what locker room bullying was going to look like, and he was going to make me the poster child of it. That's when things got blown out of proportion and things got kind of slanted in favor of Jonathan Martin. But what I took out of that is, you know, like, I made some mistakes. I wish I could have had some of those situations back where I treated him better. I treated other teammates better. And what was important to me was harboring good relationships going forward, treating people how I wanted to be treated, and ultimately changing my legacy.
Right. And I think you did that in Buffalo. Yep. You know, when you talk about guys would always say, like, who's the funniest dude in the locker room? They'd be like, oh, Richie's the funniest dude. And you'd dance around and we'd have fun. But you learned from that and you knew how far you could go with guys.
Right.
And you learned where you could take it to. And I could tell based upon how guys responded to you in Buffalo, how much you learned from that. And then you became a leader
right.
in Buffalo.
Absolutely.
And I know how valuable your leadership was because of, and you, I don't know if you've seen Brandon Bean's comments recently, but he's like, man, when we lost Eric and Richie, we lost a lot of leadership on offense. And,
right.
And I definitely know that. But when you go from being called out like that in Miami and then in Buffalo, you have the GM after all the stuff happened and you're gone from Buffalo – postseason 2018, that's what he's talking about.
Right.
He's mentioning you in a positive light.
Right.
So you obviously made a great impact post-Miami saga, we'll call it. But you've always been savvy off the field, and I've always looked up to that in you and kind of led me into like looking into some different investments and stuff off the field. What are you into? I think people will be fascinated to know what kind of like investments you're in off the field.
Right. Yeah, I've always been really big about saving money and investing wisely, and obviously the stock market is the safest play, and you know, I was fortunate enough to make some good money and get it saved away in the stock market. But I met a financial advisor back in the day who was really good about evaluating outside business opportunities. And he kind of opened my eyes to ventures other than your traditional stocks, bonds, you know, mutual funds, stuff like that. And he got me involved in a helicopter company back in 2010. Me and an old teammate, Anthony Fasano. So we evaluated this helicopter company. I went into it looking for experience, knowledge, and, you know, just overall some business techniques. And what we did was we acquired a portion of a helicopter company that was a survival flight helicopter company, and we fly all over the Midwest and we rescue people.
Right.
So I'm involved in that. It's called Survival Flight Group, Survival Flight Inc. And we've grown it from, I think when we started, we had two or three bases with three leased helicopters, and now we have eight bases with like 30 helicopters and 60 people on staff. So it's really kind of exploded. But that kind of led me into other ventures and other things that I've evaluated. And I've since invested in a food delivery service app in South Florida.
Nice.
I've invested into a gun range in Las Vegas. It's going to be called OnSite. I'm excited about this one. Guns and shooting's always been a passion of mine, being from Arizona. And I got an opportunity to team up with a guy from Salient Arms International, which is basically the Ferrari of weapons. They sell anything from a 9 all the way up to a 223 platform. And they really, really specialty type weapons, high end. And what we did was we created a user experience in Las Vegas that is second to none. Going to have a double story shooting range, shoot house experience, where basically you come in with six guys and you purchase a package. It's basically 1,000 rounds for $1,000, and you kind of have at it. That's at the base range. But you can shoot 50 caliber in there. You can shoot fully automatic. We can have Delta Force guys come in and train you.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, so that was good. And then the food delivery app down in Florida has kind of taken traction. We just attracted a big investor from New York who's going to try and take us to our Series A. It's called Ezio. And basically it is Uber Eats for beach clubs and pool services. And we saw a void in the market for food delivery. And on the user end for individual resorts and things like that, there was a market for them because they were seeing people skip out on checks. You know, people order down in Miami, order a bottle of champagne, a bunch of food. Next thing you know, the guy takes off and the server didn't get a card. And next thing you know, that's falling back. That's hurting the bottom line. So what we did was created a closed chain system of ordering and paying. And basically now the servers just turn into runners. And what we're seeing is an uptick in charges and users using the app again. And it's going great. So, yeah, so got my hand in a little bit of everything. And it's fun to kind of check in on these businesses. And I'm trying to learn as much as possible.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that. I'm sure listeners would be absolutely fascinated. You know, they think as football players that we just know ball, but listening to Richie Incognito talk about a Series A and stuff is probably not what they expected when they tune into a podcast that you're on.
Absolutely not. I think I don't know what the perception of me is, you know, because it's obviously been skewed so many ways and there's so much crazy stuff out there. But I really kind of just shock people when I sit down and have a conversation with them. They're like, you are not what we thought. And I'm just like, yeah, you know, it is what it is.
Right. That could be good and bad. You know, you go in with whatever notions and then you can change that immediately. And it kind of blows people away. After spending a year out of football again this year, one, what's your plan for next year? And two, what's some advice you could give guys that are transitioning out of the NFL? Because it's not an easy deal.
No, it's definitely not an easy deal. It's a lot more difficult than I anticipated. And I really didn't do any planning for it. I just kind of was shooting from the hip when I did it. My plan going forward is to get in beast mode shape and hopefully make a comeback. You know, I'm in excellent shape. I still have a lot of tread on the tires. I really think that I can compete at a high level. And I still have the passion for the game. You know, I still get up every day and I still want to compete, want to be the best in the world. And I feel like I have a few seasons left, so I'm going to explore that possibility. You know, I'm waiting for the combine to come around. I'm waiting for some opportunities to pop up and start seeing what's out there. On the other side of the coin, I am preparing for, you know, if I don't get an opportunity. What I'm doing is I'm finishing my degree and buying myself some time to figure out what that next step is, whether it's in media or business. My brother's begging me to open up a business. We just don't know what yet.
You and Derek, the Godfather. Yeah,
the Godfather. He's I'm his golden goose, you know. But I'd love to go into business with my brother and start something up. But we've been kind of evaluating markets and looking at different type of stuff. We're not sure if we're going to stay here in Arizona or what we're going to do. But I think the biggest piece of advice I can give somebody that's transitioning out is get into a routine. Mm-hmm. Provide as much structure as you can. I'm doing it with school, workouts, and then body work, you know, Pilates and massage and stuff like that. So I went from 6 months of nothing, 6 months of partying, traveling, checking in with friends, playing golf, doing whatever I wanted, to now 8 months of school, training, and body work. And I really just kind of have no time to do anything. And that's how I like it. You know, that's what I miss about playing ball is the schedule and the having to be somewhere and the accountability. So I built that in for myself.
Yeah, I missed that schedule too. And I had heard it from people before, but you don't get it until you're in it. Yeah. You know, you think like, no, I'm going to love not having a schedule. I'm going to love not getting to the facility at 6:15 a.m. every day. I'll be able to sleep in. I found myself waking up earlier just because I felt guilty that I was sleeping
right,
in.
Yeah.
It felt like a waste. Yeah. I'm sitting there with anxiety like I need to be doing something. I don't know what it is.
Right.
And it's hard to tell someone that also didn't play ball that because they look at you and they're like, Richie, you have enough money to just sit there. You had an awesome career. Why don't you just chill?
Exactly.
Dude, you made it. This is the American dream.
Right.
Well, it's not the American dream for people that are driven like me and you.
Right.
The American dream is not to sit around and do nothing. The American dream is to pursue something you're passionate about, to be successful at something, and go try and be the best in the world at something else. But, you know, I was sitting there at 32 like, oh, great. Now I'm going to have to go get – what am I going to get, an entry-level job somewhere?
Yeah,
and then, and then at, what, 70 I'll be – you know, it took me 32 years to be, you know, where I was in football. You know, then what?
Yeah. No, it's a trip, dude. It's a trip because even playing, you think I would – my goal was always go back to school, do some media stuff, keep myself a little bit busy. But then once you're out, you really can't prepare for all the free time and no structure. And – I've had a lot of people like, why don't you just play golf and video games every day and sleep in, dude? You've made it. You got enough money. You can chill. And it's like, no. That's when the guilt and all that stuff starts mm-hmm. setting in. Like, I got to be doing something. And then, you know, you really start spinning your tires. But, yeah, it's definitely an interesting transition, man.
for sure. I'm a big morning routine guy. Mine starts each day. I like to get up. I meditate. I use the Headspace app, or I might, if someone else has got a good meditation deal, I might check that out. Get in my Bible and read. I generally am reading another book at the time. I'll read some of that. Then I like to go to the gym and get a workout in, and then come to back to the house. And then my mind's right to, like, attack the day, attack being a dad, going right back in the trenches with a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And you truly start to appreciate your wife a lot more when you get in the house a lot more, and you're like, wow, you do this every day, and I'm losing my patience after an hour. What's your morning routine? What sets you up for success?
Pretty similar. So my morning routine is wake up, get my vitamins and supplements in, which is a job of its own, making sure everything's in top-notch shape. So vitamins and then meditation. I'm using the Muse app. It's a headband, and it monitors brain activity. And
nice.
It's pretty cool. They do some guided stuff, and they measure 4 or 5 different areas. And the deeper you go into it, they start trying to trick you with bird noises and, like, bamboo sticks. And, like, it's almost like a mind game. And the deeper you get into it, you start hearing birds. So you're like, okay, I'm at that level, and they try and, like, rattle you out of that low level. So I'm up to about 15 minutes on that, which is, it's very hard to sit still for 15 minutes. And then I'm off. Breakfast, I'm out the door for school, usually finishing up a last minute assignment, and then I'm out the door to school, and then right from school I'm in the weight room.
Nice. That's awesome. I skipped mine. My first thing I do is I wake up and I drink 40 ounces of water with pink Himalaya salt and apple cider vinegar and creatine in it to get my day going, you know, just to jump start it from there. So that I did skip that. I get my vitamins and stuff that way too.
Yeah, that's a task all in of itself. Vitamins and water and getting all that stuff in, trying to get 40 ounces of water in. I mean, that's a half hour out of your day trying to get all that stuff.
Trying to make your body feel good after years of car crashes on the field and trying to get the body back. I have a story for you, and I'm sure you remember this. So me and Richie played a ton of ball next to each other. I would argue at a very high level. Not many center guard combos played at the level we were playing during that time we were playing together. And we rarely ever bickered on the field, which is pretty rare, you know, especially with two guys who are used to kind of running the show up front. Normally there'd be like, dude, why didn't you make this call? Why didn't – you know, you were supposed to help me out. And generally, if we messed up, one of us knew whose fault it was.
Right, and we just rode with it. I mean, we had a very good working relationship. And, you know, you were the clear leader when I got there, which helped me just kind of come in and – just assume my role. You know, I was the enforcer. I was the energy guy. I was the guy that was going to talk some trash. And then what we really had a good system of checks and balances, because you and I both like to be right.
Right.
And you and I both find it very hard when a coach is wrong. You know what I mean? We put so much time into it. And when we'd be sitting in the meetings and the coach would say something wrong and we knew it was wrong, we were both the first ones to speak up. But when we got out on the field, I found it easy to just kind of hang back and let you run the show at center, because you were so smart and you were so quick with it. And then you would make the point, we would go from there, and if something came up, we would go talk about it, dialogue about it on the sideline. We were really good about it. But that one time, now that you bring it up.
Yeah, that, and you had to tell Cordy what to do most of the time.
Yeah, I had to tell every left tackle I've ever played next to what to do on every single snap.
Yeah, and that's what guys don't realize that don't play offensive line. You know, we all have to be in perfect synchronization on every play, and a lot of times it takes a smart guard to relay the message out to the tackle and get him going. But left tackles do what they do. They don't necessarily need to know what to do all the time.
Right.
But on third down, you got to be able to pass block their best player.
On third down, on run blocks, left tackles are super special, but you show me a good left tackle, he has a really good guard right next to him telling him exactly what to do. And I mean, oh, man, Cordy, Kwanju, Dion, I mean, all those guys. I mean, they were bright guys, but, you know, to speak and to play at the level that we were playing at, you had to have a lot of information.
Yeah, in a Greg Roman offense. But there was one time we had an enormous spat on the field where people were, like, holding us back from each other. So it was 3rd and 1 against Miami in Buffalo, and we have the playoffs on the line. Like, we have to beat them. We had to win – pretty much went out, or maybe we were going to New England the next week, so we probably weren't winning that one. And then we had to go down to Miami,
yep.
And then we could make the playoffs if some things worked out. So we have a third and one, and we had a call called wipe where Richie would block down, and then I would pull around him, and it was like a way to cut off the defense, and I would pull, and the running back would follow me. Well, there was a timeout right before the snap, but we still did the scheme, and that's to kind of catch him off guard. Well, we were on our way to the line the next time, and I said, Richie, don't wipe, because – they know it. I didn't give the explanation. I was thinking in my mind, don't wipe because they know it's
they
coming.
Know it's coming, right? Yeah.
And they're gonna flow right into it.
Right.
But I just said, hey Richie, don't wipe. But he didn't hear me say don't. So me and Richie run right into each other. Third and one, we get stuffed in the backfield. We come off the sideline, and everybody is so mad at us. And I was like, I said don't wipe, and you're like, that's not even a call. Which it isn't.
It isn't a call.
It isn't.
It's not in the call sheet. Nowhere in football do you ever do a don't wipe or a no, don't do this. It's either a wipe or a not wipe. And, I mean, it was such a rule breaker. I lost my mind. I blew a gasket, and we were both going at it. You're like, God, you said don't wipe.
But I was making it so, you know, in my mind, I was making it so easy. Like, hey, don't wipe it this time. But it was so funny, and like Shady's normally the instigator, and then he's trying to be the peacemaker.
Yeah, it was
hilarious. But looking back.
Yeah, when you're out there, you're just listening for tag words. You're listening for just one little thing, and I heard that wipe, and I was like, I'm coming down. I'm gonna knock the crap out of this guy. And we both ran into each other.
Yeah, and there was times when we would like mess up a call, or maybe you didn't hear it on the road, but like that was the only time we got into it.
Yeah, that was hot. That was funny.
So we have some recurring questions coming up. I hope you enjoy these. The first one, if all jobs in America paid exactly the same, what would you do for a living?
Ooh, that's a good question. If all jobs in America paid the same, I mean, I would probably say something like be a golf pro or something like that, but my golf game is trash. That's a good question.
Yeah, it doesn't come with a new skill set.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, I would just work out all the time. I'd probably, if it was all the same pay, you know, run a gym. I'd be in the gym all the time. That's where I love to be. I love being in the gym. I love training.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you know what? My takeaway is you should invest in a gym.
I know, right?
You know what I mean? Like, if that's something that you're truly passionate about and you are into health and wellness, and like, dude, you could pour into so many O-linemen, football players in general, professional athletes.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like giving them that total well-rounded approach. Like maybe that's something.
The whole incognito approach.
Yeah, maybe that's something that you move forward with. You know, you train at Exos and maybe you partner up with them or take something they do well and get your own deal going. But
I've thought about it. I've definitely thought about it, but there's a lot that goes into a gym, you know, membership and getting professional athletes in there and keeping them in there. It's difficult.
I'm in that grind.
You're in that grind.
We're on our third name change now. We were originally a D1, and then we partnered up with a hospital affiliate, and now they're out. Mm-hmm. You know, because it took so long to get anything approved by their board. Hey, we need this new equipment. Oh, okay, well, we have a board meeting in 2 months. Like,
great.
No, we need equipment.
Yeah,
you know, we need this. But now we got. I think we have 10 pro baseball players training there.
That's awesome.
Some basketball guys, some football guys, you need your members, like your kids and your families is where you make your money.
Absolutely.
In a gym. So it's in the black, but it's not paying the bills yet, that's for sure.
Right.
But we're not putting any more money in. Next question, what's your favorite book?
My favorite book? Oh, I've got a couple of them. I really liked Jocko's book, Extreme Ownership. That was one, and that probably sticks out because that's one I just read recently. I like Chris Kyle's book, American Sniper. Mm-hmm. That was good. I love Navy SEAL books, all Navy SEAL books. Any Given Day, I think that was by Mark Owen.
Yep.
Lone Survivor. Lone Survivor was good. You know, I don't like when they do the movies about them and the movies don't do the books justice. Like
if you only watched Lone Survivor, you're like, man, that's a pretty good movie. But if
you read the book, it was so much more epic than that. And they go into all the training and all the nitty-gritty. And I love that mindset. So I love Navy SEAL books. I love war books. That's about it. Yeah, anything to do with, like, elite performers, you know, elite athletes, elite Navy guys, elite, like, warriors, stuff like that. That's pretty cool.
I think it's very healthy for athletes in general, especially pro athletes, to read military books and to, like, understand, like, you know, you think you got it tough and you think our training's, like, really difficult and
right.
We ran 10 hundreds for a conditioning session. Like, Bro, that is nothing.
That's nothing
compared
yet.
To what these are doing. These guys are doing, and what they are doing is we call it battle on a football field, and we say we're going to war. Like,
right.
We are not going to war. Read a book,
yeah,
and put yourself in some perspective.
Well, yeah, there's always a next level, and that's like there's so many parallels between the brotherhood and the training and all that. But then once you get to that war zone and the crazy training, you know, the SEALs getting wet and sandy before they do anything. You know, they'll be in fresh, crisp outfits, and they'll make them go jump in the 40-degree water and then roll around in the sand, and then they have to do a task. It's like, dude, we have it easy.
We hop in an indoor. In Buffalo, if it gets too cold or too snowy, I'll hop in the indoor. And then we complain when it's too hot in there. I complain.
Oh, we used to complain all the time because we'd be cramping up in there.
Right, we'd be cramping up in practice. What are you most excited about for the next chapter of Richie Incognito?
Well, one of the most things that's exciting me is the opportunity to go play again. You know, that's what's kind of driving me right now. As far as the next step, the most exciting part is just a new challenge, just something new to attack, you know, kind of buying some time with school, trying to figure out where I fit into the real world. You know, what am I going to do? Am I going to be an independent business owner? Am I going to join up? Am I going to go for some postgraduate degree and look for some work? Am I going to give it a go in media? You know, it's a new challenge and kind of forming a new identity away from the wild man on the football field.
Right. And honestly, I think you can be successful in anything you did just because I know you'll bring that same approach you took to football to the media world, to the business world, and you'll blow people away because, in general, people aren't used to working like that. And people aren't, you know, you come from the football field where you're pouring everything into it and everything matters. Like, yeah, you didn't do the traditional entry-level job and, you know, grind your way to the top. But when you've trained and when you have what it takes to get to the certain point that you did of your career, you can do that. You'll be able to emulate that in other fields, and I'm excited to watch it. We have some quick rapid fires. There's going to be a lot of people from Buffalo tuning into this, so I'll ask you for Buffalo. It could be any city, really. But what's your favorite restaurant in Buffalo?
My favorite restaurant is Tapo downtown.
That was your spot.
That was my spot, dude. I had an apartment about three blocks away from there, and that was my jam. The Bolognese, garlic bread, and what else was good from there? Man, that place. Oh, the shrimp risotto.
Did you say
Bolognese?
Is that Bolognese?
Bolognese, whatever.
You're Italian. You would say it correctly. I'm saying like
Bolognese.
Is that what I would? Is that what I call?
I'm not exactly sure. I may have been messing that up. But it was good.
But the people think you because it's your incognito.
Incognito.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, that plate Tapo was my jam. I like C-Bar as well. C-Bar was good.
Is a good spot. What's your favorite wing spot in Buffalo?
Barbill, hands down.
We got our mugs.
Barbill, the mug collection out at Barbill, and then
tell them what your mug said. I named it for you.
Yeah, you did. I'm never drinking again because I am notorious for having just a knockdown, drag out drinking session, then being in a full blown depression for 3 weeks and never drinking again. So, what was the place we used to go to all the time where they made the wings? The place over in Lackawanna,
Mulberry
Cafe was always quality. Those may have been – they didn't even have the wings on the menu, but those may have been the best Buffalo wings in Buffalo.
So now they do.
Okay.
And they all – Joe Yergi also opened up a spot called Sonny Red's, which is wood fire pizzas and wings.
Ooh.
And he'd probably under crush the wings, it. Under the wings at both spots now it says made famous by Ewood 70.
Ah, nice. Yeah. You did make – dude, we used to go in there and crush those. That place was great.
Yeah. Guys would get them – like, guys would get to-go orders down there, but they don't even have the wings on the menu.
Yeah, exactly.
Who was your favorite teammate in your career? And it might be tough to say one. You can give a few. Don't say me.
It's definitely you. You're number one.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're number one. I really enjoy playing with you. I mean, Kyle Williams is up there. Kyle Williams is – I mean, you experienced it. He's just one of the – most special individuals that you ever could find. And similar to you, you know, like I'd be having a bad day and you'd be getting negative or doing something and you guys would put a positive spin on it and be like, oh man, like it's not so bad, you know? But yeah, no, you definitely, I confided in you a lot. You made my transition coming back from Miami that much easier. You allowed me to be myself and not have to like be in a shell and, allowed me to interact with guys.
But if you ever were starting to take it somewhere, I'd be like,
old Richie. New Richie. Yeah, new Richie. You and Tyrod were big on the new Richie.
Tyrod took it from me. He got a huge kick out of it.
He would catch me doing just those dumbest things, and he would always be around the corner. He'd be like, come on, dog. We talked about this. New Richie.
I know. And Tyrod's so nice. You like can't even like make
no,
fun of
you
him
can't
back.
Even, you can't even get like, mad at him.
You're like, all right, Dad.
Yeah.
I got you, Tyrod.
You know what? I really enjoyed playing with Shady, too. Shady.
Me too, man.
Shady was one of the most enjoyable guys to be around because he was just – he's a lightning rod. He's always causing some stuff, always arguing, always doing some stuff. He's hilarious. Pouncey. I really enjoyed playing with Pouncey. Pouncey came in as a young kid, and it was really funny because he came from the University of Florida. He came from a very – highly touted high school football program in Florida. And then he went to the University of Florida, played for national championships, played with Tebow. And I remember watching his transition when he got to the league, and it blew his mind that we were going to lose games.
Right.
And we got into the season, and his rookie year was really rough for us. We started off, I think, like 0-7, 0-6, and you know what that's like.
I've been there.
It's miserable. I mean, there's nothing worse than putting all your hope and dreams into a season and coming out and not winning anything. And I remember him just being so disgusted and me having many, many talks with him like, listen, this is the NFL. You're not going to win every week, but you have to control your attitude, your effort. You have to bring it every single day. And we had a ton of talks about that. But Jake Long's another guy. Just me and him clicked so well, and we played so well for so long next to one another.
Yeah, you all killed it.
We played really well together, man. We played. I at first didn't want to play next to Jake Long. I felt when I got down to Miami, I was a right guard. I got drafted and played right guard for 5 seasons in St. Louis, and I was like, I don't want to transition over. Jake's awesome over there. Leave me over here. Slide everything to Jake. Let me wrestle with the 3 technique. You know, it'll give us a little more balance.
Mm-hmm.
And then the minute I got there, they lied to me in Miami. They were like, you're going to play right guard. Sign here. You'll play right guard, right guard, right guard, right guard. Literally the first OTA practice we go out there, like, hey, so go jump over next to Jake. And me and Jake ran a double team, and we picked a guy up and dropped him on his head. And I was like,
right.
Let's go.
Man, what a career he could have had without the injuries. He had a great career. He could have just been an all-timer.
He would have been a Hall of Famer.
Right. Who's the most famous person in your phone?
Most famous person in my phone? Probably say Reggie Bush.
Reggie is super famous.
Reggie's super famous. He's on the NFL Network. You know, everybody's always asking me about him when
dated
I play with
him. Dated a Kardashian.
I'd say Reggie. Yeah, probably Reggie.
I always tell the story about Reggie. Like, when you go out with guys that play football, guys come up and bug you, especially like we're around the O-line. Yeah. We went out with Reggie one time in training camp, and bartender females were leaving their spot where they're getting tons of tips. They were leaving their spot to come to our table to ask him if they could take a shot with him, just to say they took a shot with Reggie.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
I'm like, Reggie is next level famous. Like, we get all the dudes like slap you on the back real hard, like, can't wait to watch you play this year, dude. Yeah,
this guy's got chicks coming out of the woodwork. We went to a club one time in Miami. We went on a Monday night, and we did offensive line dinner. We went down, and we're all dressed like a bunch of dorks. We're all wearing, like, khakis and polos and button-downs and stuff like that. And Reggie's like, come over to this club on Monday night. It's really cool. It's got a good scene. So we get over to this club, and we got there before Reggie, and we're just kind of like standing around having drinks, you know, just being guys, you know, tapping each other in the nuts and just, you know, drinking and minding our own business. And we're like trying to talk to chicks, and they're just on a totally different wavelength in Miami. And we're dressed up like we just got out of church. And Reggie got there, and he came in, and he was in a hoodie, and he sat in the back, and they brought out all this liquor. And the next thing you know, it's like 20 models all over, like they were like hovering over us, and next thing you know, we're pouring liquor in their mouth. I was like, damn, Reggie.
What was your first car?
My first car, me and my mom split. It was a Volvo 740 GLE. It was heavy, it was slow, and I worked a summer job doing something with pools, either digging pools or mixing cement for pools or tying steel in pools. And I went and got a set of 12s in the back in the trunk, 2 12-inch Rockford Fosgates, and I had it hooked up into the the stereo, and when you would turn that thing on, the Volvo was so heavy and it was all steel. You would turn that thing on, it sounded like a garbage truck coming down the street, just like brrr. And so my mom, she used to drive it to work, and she'd be like, "How do I turn the bass down?" I'm like, "You can't. You just gotta live." Just
Donna, yeah. Donna cruising down with the subs going,
yeah, just blaring.
That is so awesome. What's your favorite movie?
Favorite movie? I like dumb movies. I like Superbad. Superbad's up there.
Mm-hmm.
Anchorman's always up. Oh, Step Brothers. Step Brothers is good.
That's my favorite.
Yeah,
too.
Step Brothers is up there. That was such a trendsetter.
That's awesome. Well, that's it for the rapid fire questions, dude. I can't thank you enough for coming on. It is so awesome to hang with you. It's so awesome to see you. You're doing phenomenal. I can't give you a higher recommendation for a team for this upcoming year, because you will be an absolute asset to the team like you were in Buffalo. Appreciate our friendship. You have a shot to come back. I can't come back. I wish you well into that. If you're not, I can't wait till hang more in our next chapter together if you're not playing. But wish you the best, brother. Are there any foundations or anything you want people to get behind, and where can people find you on social media?
People can find me at good old 68 Incognito, Twitter and Instagram. The foundation that I'm behind is the Eric Wood Foundation.
My man.
Always on E. Woods Foundation. And, yeah, man, I really appreciate you, man. It's so good to see you, and we spent so many good years together, and I'm excited for the next steps for us.
My man, appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you for tuning in to What's Next with Eric Wood. Please subscribe and rate it 5 stars if you enjoyed it today. Look forward to sharing another interview with you in a couple weeks. Have an awesome day.